Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, be seated, please. First case on our calendar is 95-1907, State of Ohio versus Tyrone Ballou. Justice Stratton has recused herself from this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Stratton, Judge Roger Klein, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals, sitting in the 4th District. Welcome, Judge Klein. Mr. Hastings.
Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices, my name is Robert Hastings. I represent the appellant in this matter, Tyrone Ballou. As this court knows, this is a penalty that carries a penalty of death. This homicide occurred back in 1990. There were a number of individuals. This involved the collection of a drug debt. The individual is Donald Hill. He was taken from a residence, put in a car, taken to another location. All the individuals exited the car, went down a hillside, and ultimately what happened was that he was shot 3 times by a co-defendant, Patrick Coffey.
Counsel, everyone else fled. Right?
That is correct.
Was your client offered a similar deal?
He was offered the same deal that Coffey was offered. That was an aggravated murder with a gun specification, concurrent sentences with regard to the aggravated burglary and the kidnapping.
So he was offered the opportunity to avoid the chair.
That is spread upon the record, John. That is correct.
Is there any credible evidence at all that the defendant was not at the bottom of the hill with the co-defendant?
Coffey states that he was not at the bottom of the hill at the time that the shots rang out. It's clear that Johnson and Robinson were not at the bottom of the hill. It's unclear as to where Baskin was. Baskin was either at the top of the hill or going up the hill. There's some contradictions between them as to whether or not Ballou was further up the hill than Baskin or whether he was right behind him. But
Baskin and the other man indicated that at some point Ballou was down at the base of that hill with Coffey.
All 5 of them were at the base of the hill at one time or another.
But 3 of them left.
That's correct.
And Ballou didn't leave with them. I just want to know, other than Coffey's testimony, because I'm never sure Ballou knew where he was at this point, but other than Coffey's testimony, is there any direct evidence that he was not at the bottom of that hill?
No, there's no other direct evidence that he was or was not at the bottom of that hill at that time, other than Coffey.
Thank you, sir.
The primary focus of this appeal is whether or not there was, in fact, prior calculation and design in this homicide.
Well, there was evidence that they went and got these guns. They took the victim out of his house. They took him to a deserted place. You don't think that shows prior calculation and design?
Well, all I can say, Your Honor, is that when he was taken out of the house, he was not taken out of the house at gunpoint. There were no guns pointed at this individual. He went out of the house.
Well, isn't there a difference of agreement over that fact?
Over which fact, Your Honor?
Whether, in fact, he went willingly and got into the car.
I don't think that there's any dispute that he was kidnapped. The question is, what's the specific intent that there was an intent to kill him? There was clearly an intent to try to extract the money that he owed them. There's no doubt about that.
Did they think he had money?
They thought that he had money, or they thought that he had a car which he could sign over to them. That was what the evidence showed. And so he kept telling them as he left the house, and this was said in the presence of the other two people that were in the house, I'll get your money, you know, take me to my sister's, I'll do what I have to do. And he put his jacket on, he wasn't taken out in his underwear or anything like that, and he went out into the car. And there's no doubt that they continued to hit him as they went through the streets of Cincinnati. But again, when they got out of the car, he wasn't taken out of the car at gunpoint. And Ulrich Robinson, three times, asked Ballou whether or not, you know, what was going to happen. And at each instance, at the house where he was taken, when he was taken outside the car, and when they went down the hillside, he was assured by Ballou that they were not going to kill him. They were going to scare him. They were going to try to get their money back. They were going to try to have him tell them where there was money to get. And this is corroborated by Baskin. It's corroborated by Johnson as well. And it's corroborated by Coffey. But the first three are statements that were made in the state's case by the state's witnesses. Now, the state also called a lady that Ballou had tried to find Hill through, and she said that Ballou had not threatened Hill when he was trying to find him. In other words, he didn't say, you know, if he doesn't give you the money, he's going to be dead, or I'm going to kill him. There was no express statement of intent to kill him. So the question is whether this was an attempt to collect this debt that spun out of control, or whether in fact there was proof of prior calculation and design.
Well, counsel, almost every convenience store robbery that ends up in murder, don't we get somewhat the same story? We went in to rob the place, the clerk got nervous or reached under the counter or whatever. Something happened.
But he
never went in intending to kill the clerk. I mean, that's never the story.
But they're not charged with prior calculation and design. It's a felony murder. And obviously the intent to kill can be interpreted from the fact that the firearm was used. Then we get into the situation of, as a complicitor, did Tyrone Ballou have the specific intent to kill Donald Hill?
Wasn't it Tyrone who made the threat to one of the actors here that she would find Mr. Hill stinking next time she saw him?
There was some comment about stinking, but it wasn't exactly as Your Honor's quoted it. It says, I'll find him stinking. Mm-hmm. Not that you'll find him stinking. And she quite candidly said to the jury and the judge and everyone, I don't know what that means. I don't have any idea what that means.
The test is whether any rational trier of fact could have found in terms of sufficiency. So I guess that's what you have to address with all these things combined. He was the one who put together, Mr. Ballou was the one who put together the armed force to get Mr. Hill out of the home. Then there's the threat, whatever it means. He's down the hill. He's beating him.
Well, they were all beating him, and three of them didn't even get charged with aggravated murder. You know, everyone in this situation worked out some deal. The only one that didn't, as has been pointed out, was Tyrone Ballou.
But he was offered the deal.
That's correct.
Yeah, so
there's no question about that.
It seems to me that Hill attempted to say, I'll pay him. It was saying, I'll pay the money, you know, let me get the money. They didn't do that. I mean, it seemed if they came for the money, I guess they certainly came to do something more than just get the money that he purportedly owed them. Don't the facts indicate that?
I would think the facts indicate that they wanted to impress upon him that they were not happy the fact that he had absconded, that he'd been gone, that he had not made any efforts to repay this money. But Coffey says, when he's the only one at the bottom of the hill, maybe Ballou's somewhere in the vicinity, he says, finally, at that point, Hill says, I don't have any money, you're not getting any money. And in an instant, he shoots him three times. In the back and in the shoulder. And the question is whether or not that's an instantaneous eruption of events, similar to what happened in the Davis case, which is in our brief, where the individual got into an argument in a bar, left the bar, got a weapon, came back, and then shot the individual. In that case, the court said that wasn't prior calculation and design. That was an instantaneous eruption, and therefore, it wasn't prior calculation and design.
Well, are you claiming that one of two things, that your client didn't do any of the shooting, or your client did shooting that he didn't really plan to do, that he just did it in a fit of excitement and rage, was not calculated or planned or anything? Which of the two theories are you going with?
My theory, Your Honor, is that he did not do the shooting. He is not the actual killer.
Okay.
So and there's no evidence to substantiate that he was.
So whether there's prior calculation, the design, premeditation, all the other stuff doesn't apply because your man didn't pull the trigger, he didn't do anything.
Well, the problem is, Your Honor, is that he was charged in the alternative, and they found him guilty of an offense of 2903.01A, which is prior calculation design. And the Court of Appeals rationale was that because he was convicted of the A subsection, that it didn't make any difference about the principal offender or not when it came to the aggravating circumstance. And so that's the critical nature of whether there was prior calculation design proven and shown as it relates to Ballou, or Coffey for that matter. Obviously, if this court finds that they don't believe there was prior calculation design by Coffey, then the complicity aspect of it takes it out of the principal offender as it relates to Ballou. We have a confusing situation here where we have a man charged with capital offense. There's a specification that says he's a principal offender, but there's no definition to the jury with regard to that. He's charged, or at least the prosecutor is arguing that he's a complicitor, and they don't know whether or not he's the one that fired the weapon. And they're arguing that he can be convicted as though he were the principal offender. And they've got a gun specification that says even though you didn't fire the weapon, you can be convicted as though you were the principal offender.
It's on that issue that I'd like to ask you a question, and if you would prefer not to answer it, I would understand. So just say so. Given the fact that he admits that he was there, and all the testimony that he was there, he knew he was going to be charged as the other people were going to be charged, at least. In fact, he was offered the same arrangement or deal. What could have motivated him, what could have motivated him not to accept that arrangement? Is there any thought here that he's going to be acquitted?
Your Honor, I asked Mr. Ballou that question, and he told me the answer.
You want to tell me or not?
I think I am going to tell you.
Okay.
He told me that his counsel advised him that he should not take the deal. That's what happened. Because obviously when I took the appeal, I was curious as well. Why, faced with all this, faced with the statements that they've given, why didn't you take the deal? So we're faced with this.
I thought I read someplace that his counsel had advised him to take the deal. Is there anything in the record on that?
There is. On the record, it indicates that his counsel did advise him.
Okay, so the record indicates his counsel
correct.
Did advise
what
him to take
What he told me, though, was the contrary.
So we've had the record, we have an off-record statement. I think we should probably be confined to the record, shouldn't we, on that point or not?
Well, I was simply trying to answer the question.
I understand. No, I understand. I'm just wondering if you, if, yeah, I know that, but I'm just saying, is this something that we should, do you think we should somehow weigh in the off-record statement, or what do we do with a statement like that?
Well, I think your constraint is to stay within the confines of the record, unless it's a post-conviction matter, Your Honor, where they can go outside of the record and develop evidence. But I was just trying to respond to the justice.
Right. The
money in question was owed to Ballou, wasn't it?
It was owed to all of them, and several
to
of the
individuals. All of them?
Several of them indicated that. Coffey indicated that. Johnson indicated that. I believe Baskin indicated that. They all made statements upon their arrest and at the time that they entered pleas. And those statements were filed as part of discovery. And I reviewed those again, and those are consistent with what they testified at trial. That there wasn't an intent to kill, that the debt was owed to everybody, that Sheriff Ballou was the one who was looking for him, that most of them worked for Ballou and or Coffey, and that Hill was the one that had done the drug deal and had not paid the people back. They all agreed on all those facts. The question is whether or not this should be a death penalty situation under the theory of prior calculation and design. If this court finds it is not, then I submit under the aggravating circumstance that this man should be given the life sentence because there's no showing that he was in fact the principal offender, the actual killer.
Well, your client did take a weapon to the scene, did he not?
That's correct. And the weapon that Baskin says that he picked up, Your Honor, had a specific kind of ammunition, and they recovered that from the Broadway address, and the firearms examiner specifically said that ammunition did not match the ammunition recovered from the body of the victim.
Well, he was just there to get his money, right?
That's correct.
Why did he need to take the gun with him if he only wanted to get his debt communication?
Well, suppose that their rationale, Your Honor, as they stated in their testimony, was that this was a drug culture. They didn't know whether Hill was armed or not armed.
Well, by the time they got Hill in the car, he did take Hill out of the house and into a car, did he not?
They all did.
Yeah, well, he did too, and he went there to get Hill out of the house, did he not?
That was the express purpose, to talk to Hill.
He went there with a gun to get Hill out of the house. Why? After he put him in the car, obviously knowing Hill was not armed, did he continue with the weapon?
Well, there was conflicting in the testimony as to whether or not he had the gun down the hill. One person
there
said
was testimony that he did have.
One person said that he did. Two people said that he did not. Actually, three said that he did not.
There was testimony that the jury could believe that he did have the gun with him down at the bottom.
Correct, but there was no evidence to believe that he used that weapon, Your Honor.
The jury could infer that he did.
They can't infer from the evidence. There's no evidence to forensically show that he used the weapon.
Forensically showing maybe, but other evidence shows he had the weapon at the scene. He had a weapon at the scene.
He did have a weapon. Oh. Coffey had a weapon at the scene. Coffey's the one that admitted that he was the one that fired the shot.
These weapons were never recovered, were they?
That is correct. If I might, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve a little time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hastings. Mr. Springman.
May it please the Court, Mr. Hastings. My name is John Springman from Hamilton County, and I represent the state of Ohio. May it please the Court, it seems like the primary focus of this appeal has centered on the prior calculation and design element of aggravated murder. And I would just point out to the Court there's, you know, substantial evidence upon which the jury could base prior calculation design. There's no question that this evidence taken as a whole shows that defendant Tyrone Ballou was the mastermind, and I sort of use that term loosely, behind this. He was the one who led a group of individuals. He was the ringleader to the house where Donald Hill could be found. He was the one looking for Donald Donald Hill earlier and made, and a witness made this statement that he would find, or that they would find Mr. Hill stinking. And then he's the one who went in the house when he found out Mr. Hill's whereabouts, extracted him from the house at gunpoint. He was involved, and witnesses have testified that the defendant also struck Mr. Hill as well as others. Patricia Pearson clearly indicates that Tyrone and Patrick Coffey were down at the bottom of the hill. She said in her testimony that Jerry Baskin was walking toward the car when the first shot was fired, and that she heard two shots, and that the only people there were the defendant and Patrick. Mr. Robinson also testified. He clearly indicated that Patrick, Mr. Coffey, gave him a 9mm gun to the defendant, who gave it to Ulrich, and he further testified that the defendant had his own 9mm gun, and Coffey kept the sawed-off pump shotgun. So clearly there's evidence in the record that this defendant wanted Mr. Hill dead. He expressed that he wanted Mr. Hill dead to a witness, and then he executed a plan with other individuals.
What was that expression? Is it your contention that, what's the expression of that he wanted him dead?
I think Mr. Hastings was correct that you'll find him stinking, and my impression of that, taken as a whole, that you'll find him dead.
That same phrase. Okay.
Yes. And I clearly, with all the evidence involved, that by any rational trier of fact, conclude that that means that they will find him dead. Clearly, that was intent all along, was to at least give Mr. Hill a wake-up call. And you know, as the actions show, he wanted to kill Mr. Hill over the bad death. I think the evidence of prior calculation design in this case is perhaps stronger than some of the other cases that this court has heard, State versus Zern, Moreland, and others. And I would ask that, clearly on this record, that you affirm the judgment and death sentence below.
What does Coffey say about the prior calculation that was his testimony?
Well, Judge, he was the one, he took full responsibility. His testimony sort of was, as the Court of Appeals said, a contrived elocution. He said, I did not commit this with prior calculation and design. I was in a fit of rage when I shot Mr. Hill. He took full responsibility and said,
I understand he took it. He says, I'm the trigger man. But did he totally deny that there was any kind of a plan to execute, to kill one that got out of the car?
Specifically, Judge, I think through his testimony, you can find that, you know, he corroborated certain parts of the other witnesses' testimony that the group was together. It was the certain critical areas, such as the critical juncture when the gunshots were fired, that I think he wavered a bit and testified that and took full responsibility for this offense. But clearly in that testimony, you can find that, you know, he admits being with the group that night, and you know, through that, certainly, I think when you combine the other witnesses.
When you say there's all this clear evidence of prior calculation and design, correct me if I'm wrong, you'll find him stinking is the one direct statement that you use in that regard, and other than that, you're really doing it by inference, are you not? Circumstances, you know. Is there anybody's record in this armada that they put together? Does anybody directly acknowledge that there was either a plan or an expectation that if this guy didn't pay up, he was going to end up dead?
Not directly, certainly through circumstances, and probably a mixture of circumstantial and direct evidence, but no, they didn't get together and say, we are going to kill Donnie Hill. But by their actions, they got together, and clearly the intent was they were going to get him, they were going to find him. They were going to find him and confront him over this bad debt. And then...
Well, another inference could be that they were just going to scare the Jesus out of him.
Well, that would be taken away by Mr.
I mean, all these people and all these guns would certainly scare most people.
Right, but I think what I would point to the testimony of one witness after this occurred, testified that the defendant made a statement when questioned about Hill. Did you kill him? Well, we did what we had to do. And taking that statement together with all the actions preceding the murder, I would submit
so that shows that statement after the fact when he came up back to the car helps.
I think it clearly helps.
And all of Coffey's testimony was made at the trial was after he had entered his own plea to
yes,
and been sentenced.
Right. He did mention, too, that, you know, he was the one that went and got the guns. You know, he said he got a shotgun, two 9mm handguns, and then Patricia Pearson took him to the house on Harvey Avenue under his direction. So there's elements of the plan in his testimony to corroborate.
Before the pleas, before everybody else cut the deal, did they give any statements to the police?
None were admitted into evidence, so I can just assume that there wasn't any.
So up until the time they had their deals sealed, you had no statements from any of these co-conspirators?
I couldn't find any on this record. If there were any from other co-conspirators used in another proceeding, I'm not aware of it. But confined to this record, I have to say now. Unless there are any other questions, I would submit the remaining propositions of law and brief.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. Mr. Hastings, you've saved just about 12 minutes of your time.
May it please the court. I'd like to address the issue that was the statement that was made after they got back to the car. There were several inquiries as to who said what, and the testimony is conflicting. They were trying to attribute to Ballou that he said, I had to do what I had to do, but Coffey is the one that claims that he stated that. That the only thing that Ballou said was, you didn't think I'd be down there. And he said that to Coffey, which further evidences that Ballou didn't have the intention to do anything. Homicidal nature as it related to Hill. It indicates that Ballou's telling Coffey that he didn't even think that he'd go down the hill, let alone kill anyone.
Well, it could be another interpretation. It could be that your client is the captain of this ongoing enterprise and that the lieutenants would never expect that he would allow himself to ever get that near the dirty little business that took place at the bottom of the hill.
If defense counsel had completely prepared his examination of these witnesses, he would have been able to ask Michael Johnson, who gave a statement that said, but for Coffey, Hill would have never been dead. He told the police that, and it's filed as part of the discovery. Those are the only statements that I'm aware of, Your Honor, that these co-defendants made. They're all filed in this case in the discovery. And that's what Johnson told the police. That's what he told the prosecutors.
Let's focus for a minute on you complain that the jury was not properly charged on prior calculation of design. Is that correct?
Assignment there deals with the fact that there was no differentiation as the instruction on principal offender as it applied in this situation. There was nothing that said that in order to be a principal offender you have to be the actual killer as defined by this court in Penix. There was nothing to differentiate what a principal offender with regard to an aggravating circumstance is as it relates to what a principal offender is under the complicity statute. And there was no request by counsel, and there was no direction by the court as to how to proceed in deliberations. In other words, if you find this with regard to prior calculation and design, then then you go to this, and then this, and then this. There's none of that. And at the very end, when the court sentences on the sentencing specifications, he says, after it's all over, the prosecutor goes up and it brings to the attention that there's two counts of aggravated murder. The only thing that the trial court does at that point is says to the jury is, for purposes of your consideration, those are merged. Those are merged. And there's no definition in the sentencing phase in the instruction to the jury as to what constituted the aggravating circumstance. None. And for that reason, we say that, you know, Ballew's entitled to a complete and correct instruction with regard to the law. Otherwise, it's just a pure guessing game as to what the jury was trying to decide and whether or not one of those jurors who would or would not have found that he was the principal offender or that he wasn't involved with regard to prior calculation and design. And for that reason, Ballew's rights were violated.
There was no objection, though, to that aspect of the charge by Ballew's counsel.
Ballew's counsel made no closing argument to speak up with regard to the sentencing phase. He basically stood up and told the jury, you've heard what I've tried to do so far. I haven't been very successful. I don't think I'm going to be any more successful now. He sat down. That was it. Two paragraphs. He didn't do anything more with regard to objections. He actually, on the record, stated that he had not talked to each one of these co-defendants who were all available. I mean, they weren't somewhere where he couldn't find them. They were in the Justice Center. He had prior statements. He had every opportunity to prepare the cross-examination and to prepare the elements of prior calculation design, specific intent as it related to his client. None of this was done. None of it was argued. No argument was made with regard to complicity. No argument was made with regard to prior calculation and design.
Well, this doesn't go so far as to be a case in which defense counsel is intentionally laying down.
I do not believe so. It became to the point, as I read the transcript, though, that it didn't become an adversary proceeding. And for that reason, we raised the proposition of law with regard to ineffective assistance of counsel and listed the list of things that we felt were ineffective and that would have made a difference had he done them. I don't know how you litigate a capital murder case doing what this counsel did.
The defendant made a statement here in the penalty phase.
He made an unsworn statement, and it was clear from that statement that his counsel hadn't reviewed what he was to say at all.
Did he deny guilt?
He denied the intent to kill Hill, and he denied that he was the shooter. He did not deny that he'd been involved with regard to...
He picked up those legal issues.
May have picked those up, but he also had an outburst to the jury as well.
Well, the counsel also had, testimony of three witnesses, a couple of them from out of state, one live in depositions. In the mitigation phase, he went to some trouble to get some mitigation testimony. Was there other testimony he should have had, or is that deficient, or...
If you read it, I feel it's deficient. It was ill-organized and not very well presented. At the Big Brother testimony from the Big Brother in Lexington actually wound up being more detrimental than it was beneficial. And there was no serious attempt here to present an organized mitigation. It was done 2 days following the finding of the guilt, so we've set forth those matters in our brief. If there are no other questions, we would request that the court reverse this death penalty conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hastings. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.